Finance and Revenue is open. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to hold a simultaneous public hearing today on Senate Bill 213 and 214. This committee has been engaged during the interim quite a bit on looking at ways to let Oregon chart its own destiny, if you will, fly by our own wings, and therefore find ways to make it easier to connect or disconnect from federal tax code, from policies that nobody in Oregon created, and to opt in or connect to those that Oregon would like to keep because they're foundational and people have a familiarity with those. So let me open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 213 and 214. And Kyle, kind of give us a rundown on each approach, and we'll go from there.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 213 and 214, the bills are connected, and they're both making changes to how Oregon connects to federal tax statutes. The first one, Senate Bill 213, is more or less it starts with the standard bill that this committee has seen, and it's the annual update to Oregon's connection points to federal provisions. So just as a brief refresher, and I think Chris is going to touch on this more in a bit, Oregon really has two ways in which we connect to the federal tax provisions for income tax purposes. The first is the point-in-time connections, and these are the ones where we're pointing to a specific date for different provisions. And the second is our definition of taxable income. So again, that's where we connect at the federal level. So SB 213, many of the provisions, and there's a document in OLS that kind of charts the section by section changes to the statute and then has a little brief description of what those what that update is. But the bulk of Senate Bill 213 is updating those individual provision connections from December 31st, 2017, that point in time, to December 31st, 2018. So this is something that, again, you see the legislature generally sees annually to update those provisions. And then in addition to that, and included in the document and the meeting materials, is I've used red font to identify the areas where Senate Bill 213 would, instead of having this rolling reconnect to the federal definition of taxable income, where Oregon's constantly connected to the federal definition of taxable income, it too would become a point-in-time connection. So instead of being a rolling connect, it's then a connection, again, would also pick up at December 31st, 2018 date. So for Oregon to stay connected on an annual basis, it would require the legislature to update that provision as well as these other ones that are contained in SB 213. So that's the deviation there. We're moving that date up 1 year for a lot of these provisions, and then also fixing at a point in time the connection to that definition of taxable income. So that's Senate Bill 213.
That's what we would do normally. That's what we would do without any consideration. That's what we've done in the past. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, Senator, the red text would be the what was on autopilot in some cases. That's the rolling reconnect. And okay. Then everything else is the annual bill that the legislature sees that does require to change those dates would require a piece of legislation. So there's kind of the two parts where it's like, yeah, the portions in the red text there is kind of what's different from the traditional just annual move the years up one connection point.
So what we've did in the past is in the black?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, questions on 213. This ruling reconnect and connection issues is a little bit of a mind bender.
You mean 214, not 213?
Just the whole concept.
Kyle, could you just answer a question? We presently are, obviously we have multiple filers, and I don't know, four or five of those people out there, I guess, got up and decided that March 1st was a better date than December 31st. And so our basic tax law is either the typical end of the year, December 31st, 2017, 2018, 2019, or the the filer's tax year. The draft language changes that to date certain period. So is the intent to eliminate non-tax periods other than the physical calendar year? Is that the intent?
Senator, no. I think the reason for the choice of the day at the end of the year has just been to grab as much of the federal provisions that are in place as most recently as possible. There have been instances in the past where the legislature's chosen to connect at a different date, maybe partway through the year or something to that effect, and that was usually in response to potential federal legislation or something to that effect, where the legislature was specifically saying we don't want to connect to some new piece of legislation that passed at the federal level. But it would, grabbing that end of the year date, encompasses basically everything that was in statute at the federal level as of the end of the most recent year, the December 31st, 2018.
Not my question. I guess I'll rephrase it.
If you would, Mr. Chair. That okay?
Yes, please.
We have two tax years, right? We have a reconnection, and then we have what the taxpayer does. Okay, so the reconnection date, I got that one, right? But then it's also how it impacts the taxpayer. For example, a taxpayer may not have a calendar year. And we've eliminated the non-calendar year in the bills that are here. And so I'm just curious, you know, why we did that versus not doing it. Am I making sense here?
Senator, I think I understand. You want to, I suppose one of the benefits of having ledge counsel already in the room is I can
right,
easily
then I could go on and talk to her about ballot measure 3 and ruin her day completely.
So I would happily defer to
right.
ledge counsel.
I mean, I just wondering if there's a logic, because we've, if you go through here, I get the tax date, right? And I understand two reasons why we would do this. Go to December 31st, 2018, you know, those are all day certain. But the other thing is that we also in the tax code have allowed taxpayers to have a different calendar year other than the calendar year. And generally that's the verbiage for a tax year of the taxpayer, which we've changed those to dates certain too. So I'm wondering why we did that or what's their intent, or are we just picking up a ballot measure Scribner's error from, I don't know, 1968 or whatever it is? I've lost you completely, haven't I? Page 19 is an example on Senate Bill 213. Section 25 is an example there. We presently have traditionally used, and we've used this and explained at least to this member of the committee, for the tax year of the taxpayer, right? Meaning that way if a taxpayer wasn't from January 1st to December 31st, and now we've changed it to a date certain. Because as we know, some taxpayers don't pay from January 1 to December 31st. So I'm just wondering why we did it this way.
Yes, sir.
And you and I can go back and forth, or the chair can ask Kate to come up here and explain it to us.
She's coming up in a minute.
Okay.
And if you can just hold that for a second before we get... You're in the weeds. I'm still in the tall timber here. But the key to this is eliminating the ties to the federal taxable income. Yes?
Mr. Chair, it's setting the tie. It's fixing the tie. So instead of being that rolling reconnect, we're still tied to it. In Senate Bill 213, we still have that tie, the definition of federal taxable income.
Okay, then
it just wouldn't be an ongoing tie. So it's a fixed point in time tie. And then so if there's a change at the federal level post that, that's not in law today, we wouldn't be, Oregon wouldn't be automatically tied to that.
Right, and
so
that's
the key. Yeah.
And that's put into hypotheticals if there was a change, if they, say, ended the tuition deduction next year, as they did last year, if they did that next year with this in place, that wouldn't change our deductibility of it. We would not have to follow that policy.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the tuition and fees deduction, I mean, that one has expired. But
that's what I'm saying. But hypothetically, if that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was in place and then there was something, as long as it's not part of the law as of the time we're connected. So if it's part of the law at the time we're connected that it has a sunset date at the federal level, mm-hmm. that would probably come through to Oregon because we're connected and that was part of the current law at the time of connection. But a deviation, like let's say there was no sunset on the tuition and fees deduction, and then a year from now, the federal government changed that and got rid of it, Oregon would still have it at that time because we're connected.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's, you know, precisely the kind of thing that I think I'm always speaking for myself, I'm interested in, so that we don't have to pass a law to get that tuition deduction back. Okay, so we'll bring up LC in a minute, but we're open on 214, and we'll get an overview. You have 214 here,
yes.
Too, which is a different way of going at the same goal of letting Oregon decide what we should be and what we should not be tied to. And this one's a little more complicated, but just got an eye roll from Kate Tonswell, and it gets at the same thing, but it is what 41 other states do, so it's not exactly experimental science here. So go ahead.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 2014, and this is for the personal income taxation, it's relating to deductions. So those itemized deductions are also the standard deductions. So what 214 is doing is it's eliminating deductions on the personal income tax return. And in that way, it kind of lines up where, and again, I think Chris has a document in the media materials on this as well, is in many cases, most states have a decision to make. Where do they want to tie to federal provisions for taxation purposes? You can tie it for taxable income like Oregon does. We tie to that definition of taxable income, or many other states use adjusted gross income. And again, adjusted gross income, kind of the way that helps me at least think about it, is it's almost like it's upstream of taxable income. And between those two are the deductions. So if you tie to adjusted gross income, you're not automatically tied to those deductions or the changes that might go on in those deductions as well. So Oregon could tie to adjusted gross income and then specifically tie to different deductions or create a series of deductions if that's what Oregon policy was to do. And then those are disconnected from the federal provisions. Whereas because right now currently we're tied at taxable income, all that upstream changes that are made at the federal level that we then tie to later down, further down, is where Oregon is connected to. So they're automatically part of Oregon's tax policy decision. And Oregon would have to specifically opt out of those individual provisions. So the way the bill is set up is it's just eliminating the deductions, which in a sense is, it's not directly tying us to AGI, but it's kind of for discussion purposes. That's kind of the framework in which it lays out.
Okay. Questions of Kyle on 214? Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Kyle, the one way of seeing how this would affect us would be to look at the changes that occurred in the federal tax law just passed that had some really interesting impacts on deductions. Are you going to be showing us those by virtue of adopting this particular bill, which of those federal provisions are mooted by virtue of that change looking forward from the new date of, I guess it'd be January 1st? Because we would be stuck last year, of course, and we would no longer be connected following December 31st of last year. And thus, whatever the impact of the federal law was on this AGI, for example, it would help me a lot by calling out the impact of this change when compared to the new federal law. There we go. Mm-hmm. I just want to know if we're going to see that.
Senator, I don't have anything prepared specifically with that listing. We have talked on this during the interim, so that is some documents that we have that we could pull together pretty quickly for that. I think by switching the connection point to, say, adjusted gross income, the next decision would be, well, are the deductions that you want to bring into Oregon's tax policy? So that would be a decision to make at that time. So in that way, there's sort of a policy menu, I suppose. By just moving to AGI, doesn't automatically bring all those into Oregon statutes. There would have to be a decision to bring those in one by one, I suppose, or as one piece of legislation. But yeah, in terms, I think I'm understanding, we can definitely lay out the framework of how that would work or how that would have worked with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act changes had Oregon been connected to AGI instead of taxable
there
income.
You go. Exactly.
Okay. That's,
yeah. And that's how most states dealt with some of those controversial parts of that Tax Act. And I just so you know, Senator Vance, no, maybe in the amended version of this, we include those deductions that we buy back in to the system. Nobody's trying to raise money here. So we buy back the mortgage deduction and the others so that they're in place. But going forward, if there's a gambling subsidy or lose the deduction for tuition, we can say, we're not going to do that one. Or there's expensing. Yes, we want to opt into that one.
Thank you.
I know Kate is here. Chris, did you want to, did you have a presentation on this or any? Maybe have you both here. We have, Senator Bocas has some specific questions for you, Kate, but before that, I know that we talked about moving from federal taxable income to AGI in the fall or summer, and there were some concerns about a ballot measure that was passed in the 60s that may or may not be related and present some baggage here. And so you've been researching this, and knowing that this is not going to be the final bill here, it's going to be amended. We just wanted to get your thoughts on whether that's still your prevailing worry.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm Kate Toswell from Office of Legislative Counsel, Special Counsel and Chief Editor. I don't know if Chris wants to address any parts of this or if I should just jump right into the issues around any constitutional implications as far as moving the connection point from taxable income, from federal taxable income to federal adjusted gross income. And at this point, having looked at this and having looked at the history, which I think is important in understanding this, it appears to me that that change could be made. It would be constitutional to make that shift. So if I could go through a little bit of the background, what we have right now is a system in ORS Chapter 316, the personal income tax, and a lot of this actually carries over to the corporate, but I'm going to focus on the personal income tax because that's where a lot of this occurred. And in Chapter 316, there are a number of provisions that set forth policy and also definitions, and it makes it clear that the intent of the Legislative Assembly is to mirror the Internal Revenue Code and to have tax imposed, personal income tax is imposed on taxable income as it exists at the federal level. In 316, that's basically a synopsis of the policy statement in 316.007. In 316.012, we have a provision that says that terms in the chapter have the same meaning as in federal law. And then also in 316.048, it indicates that taxable income, the entire taxable income of a resident of this state is federal taxable income. So those are the provisions that set up Chapter 316, which is the personal income tax. Now that chapter actually came into being in 1969, and its short title, which still exists, is in 316.002. It's the Personal Income Tax Act of 1969. And if you go back and you look at the session law, this entire chapter replaced the previous ORS Chapter 316, which was the Personal Income Tax Act of 1953, and did not rely on the Internal Revenue Code. There were some references to it, but for the most part, that was a standalone tax chapter. So there was this bill that was at least 100 sections in 1969 that came in, and it made these changes, and it started the connection to taxable income. Now, in the same session, there was also HGR 3, which became the provision that allows for the rolling reconnect. That's Section 32, Article 4, Section 32 of the Constitution. Hasn't been amended since 1969, and it was voted on by the people in 1970, and it was basically a companion piece to the current Chapter 316, which it's been amended some since then, but essentially the legislature passed the new Personal Income Tax Act, and then they also passed a referral that was sent to the voters in 1970 that allowed for the rolling reconnect and said that the Legislative Assembly could define the income on, in respect to, or by which tax or taxes are imposed by reference to any provision of the laws of the United States. The important thing to know about Section 32, though, is that it's permissive. It says that the Legislative Assembly may define those provisions. It doesn't say that it's required to tie to them. And the other thing about it is that the reason it was needed is because we have a provision or basically a principle that says we can't delegate. So the authority of the legislature can't be delegated to another sovereign or to a private entity or basically outside of the legislature. And so without this, the legislature would not be able to pick up prospective changes in federal law. With this, it allows for the rolling reconnect, which means as Congress acts, and that's this language, the laws as they may be or become effective at any time or from time to time, it's picking up changes that Congress makes as they make them. So these two work together. And actually, the time that the referral was made, it was indicated that the voters were to vote on it only if the new Personal Income Tax Act of 1969 was in effect. So they were companion pieces. So at this point, if the legislature were to decide to go to a different, to connect to adjusted gross income or use another system, this would still be in the Constitution, but it's permissive. And it doesn't actually refer to either just adjusted gross income or taxable income. So I think for looking at this in its totality, there's nothing that prevents the legislature from making this change. And I think the final provision, or the final tenet, is that a legislature may not bind a future legislature. So the actions of the 1969 legislature would not prevent this change in the future.
Okay.
On that point,
Senator Bentz?
Well, I'm not sure who this question is for, but the question is the value of, excuse me, we did this once before.
Yeah.
It seems like we did it, was it 10 and 11? And there was a reason then we changed back, and I've forgotten even though I was here. Can you refresh my memory?
Jay, or?
Yes.
Senator Bentz, Chair Haas, my recollection, I believe in the 2009 session, there were several connections and disconnections which allowed, as Congress was potentially acting during that time frame, allowed the legislature, instead of being automatically connected as changes occurred, but allowed the legislature to react or to evaluate those changes as they occurred. And so my recollection, typically each year there's a reconnect bill that ties to the previous December 31st. Yeah. And that's what we have in effect right now. In the 2009 session, instead of tying to December 31st, 2008, I believe there was a point where we tied to a date in May. So we picked up, and maybe even an earlier, there were a couple of dates that we picked up so that it was frozen in time at that point. So one version, which is allowed by the by Article 4, Section 32, is the legislature acts and says, we've picked up through this date. We're going to allow the rolling reconnect to occur during the calendar year. And the other thing is to react as Congress acts and decide whether to connect individually to a particular provision, if that answers your question.
If I could add, for the record, Chris Allen, Act, Legislative Revenue Office. In 2009, just to add to what Kate was saying, we had two reconnect bills. There is one early in the session because Congress was moving forward with various provisions. So we froze early in the session, it was February-ish, we froze. And then we get to the end of the session, and then we passed a reconnect bill, or the legislature passed a reconnect bill in May or June that tied to either the March or the May date, and with a couple of exceptions. We did not tie to bonus depreciation, Section 179 expensing, And I think there was a debt forgiveness piece. And there was even a provision related to unemployment income. I think there are four provisions there. And we were disconnected from, and the two big dollar amount ones were bonus depreciation and Section 179 expensing. And we were disconnected from those provisions for tax years 09 and 10. So we didn't have the, we did go back to the rolling reconnect, but tied to an unusual date, linking back to the discussion as the committee got started, it wasn't the December 31st date. So we had two bills then, and we ended up disconnecting from a couple of provisions for two tax years.
Follow up. So I do remember this, and Kate, it seems to me, I remember you coming in and explaining a situation that we had either failed to pick up on or forgot or something. And I was super impressed with your ability to go back and forth and back and forth and back. You left us all behind after the first back and forth. But it sticks in my mind that that we were then told by the CPAs that they were not enthusiastic. And I'm wondering if we're going to be hearing from some today. But do you recall, we changed back to the rolling reconnect for a number of reasons. Was that one of them? Because the chair and I were talking about this, and I simply couldn't remember whether it was TurboTax issues or whether what happens at that tax preparer space as a result of this particular change. Because I understand the value of what the chair is suggesting, but I seem to recall that we imposed upon ourselves a lot of work because there was not that automatic connection and we had to go back in and fix it. And I think there were even some timing issues depending upon what the federal folks did. Now that's my recollection. So please take a shot at anything that I just said.
Chair Hess, Senator Benz, I recall some of these discussions from 2009, and I think there was a concern that it's much less simple if you have to look at each item, if you're not connected across the board through the rolling reconnect, because they're the items that everyone is sort of focused on, but then there may be other items, because you're now not connected, that the taxpayer or the CPA is going to have to be aware of and treating it differently on the federal return and the state return. So that may be part of that. And I think we did, and I can also address the issue about there are some sections that are hybrid that in, I believe it's Senate Bill 213, it removes the rolling reconnect from sections that alternatively either have the date or if they're dealing with the definition of taxable income, which is the provision that the Constitution allows the rolling reconnect for, avoids that delegation issue, they would no longer be hybrid if you went to a pure point in time connection. So they would just have the date, and it would be up to the legislature each year to look at a larger number of sections, all the sections that have the date, all of the sections that currently are tied to December 31st, 2017, which is the date right now, because we haven't updated and picked up through December 31st, 2018. So I think there are about six or seven sections in the ORS that have that sort of hybrid quality. It's either the tax year of the taxpayer, if it's about income, and it's the date, if it's not, if it's something that is not permitted under the constitutional provision. So yes, I think complexity, and in fact, if you look at the ballot, the voters pamphlet from 1969, one of the things that they stressed was moving towards simplicity and why they should have this true connection and be able to have the rolling reconnect. And they actually said at one point in the voters pamphlet that people believed that it was the federal and the state law were the same. And actually, before that, they weren't. So this was for the sake of simplicity.
One of the practical things that happened in 2009, if I recall, was that the recession was kicking in hard, and the federal government, which can, borrow endlessly, did some economic stimulation and bonus depreciation and expensing. That was part of it. Here in Oregon, where we can't borrow, and we were trying to we just didn't have the money to fund schools and do economic stimulation. I think that was part of the practical application, and that did, you know, and so, I mean, that is in some ways no different than where we are now, is there are certain things that just aren't practical for our state, and that's why it makes sense for me to opt in rather than having to go through this process to pass along and opt out, so.
To that point, and for the history of this connect and disconnect, now, if memory serves, a lot in the 90s we had the static connect, and there was a debate whether or not the legislature should move to a rolling reconnect. And then I believe in 97, the legislature went to a rolling reconnect. And then we had the 02 recession, and then in 03, the legislature ended the rolling reconnect. So we had a static connect for tax years 03 and 05. And then in 07, we went back to the rolling reconnect. So it's been an issue off and on. And one of one important point here is how often the legislature meets. It's a relative factor. You go back to the 90s, the legislature was meeting every other year, and it created complication for CPAs, the Department of Revenue, just everybody involved about expecting what the legislature would probably connect to when they met next the following year. And so the calculus is a little bit different nowadays with the legislature meeting every year. I mean, I'm sure you'll hear from CPAs as well, but in terms of the legislature's ability to review any changes in a timely manner, that can happen on an annual basis now. That's a piece of the calculation as well.
Let me see if I got this right. If we have a choice, we can disconnect and then determine which parts we wish to reconnect, or we can reconnect and then determine which parts we choose to disconnect. So we've had this conversation. I remember it vaguely, and I think we came down on where we are today, which was to keep the rolling reconnect and then bail out on certain elements of it, that which we did not choose to include within it. I guess I should ask you guys, I guess there would be a list of things we would consider in trying to make the decision, which I guess is what we're having the hearing for today. Which one is better? It looks to me like I recall that we did create for ourselves quite a bit of work back then, because it seems if we have the complete disconnect, then we have to come in and, just like you said, begin to address all of those things that need to be attention. But do I have this right, or clear up my thinking for me if I misstated anything in that?
Sure, has Senator right. Benz. I think that is right. I think it's it's maybe binary in a sense. There's the option of connecting and then selectively disconnecting, or disconnecting and then looking and seeing where the connection points should be, and making policy choices in either different policy types of policy choices, but policy choices in either case. One other thing I neglected to mention is that in Section 32, it does provide that the Legislative Assembly shall. This is the only part that's not permissive in Section 32. Legislative Assembly shall provide for a review of Oregon laws imposing a tax upon or measured by income, and may at a special session. So for each annual regular session, the legislature is required to do that review, and no such law shall be amended or repealed except by a legislative act. This doesn't actually prescribe how that review is to occur, but it directs the Legislative Assembly to review the income tax laws at each session. So yes, maybe there's the rolling reconnect is happening in the background. The Oregon laws are connecting to the acts of Congress as they occur, but the Legislative Assembly is directed to review the laws at each session, yeah, so that there is some sort of check. And one other thing is that I believe with the disconnect and connect that was happening in 2009, some of those provisions, the bonus depreciation and 179 expensing, those were almost, at least in some measure, about timing. They were, at the federal level, there was depreciation that was accelerated, or there was a deduction that was allowed earlier, and then wouldn't be allowed later. And in Oregon, because they were not allowed, they were not accelerated as they were under the federal system, they would be allowed later. So the numbers maybe came out the same, but the timing, it was a question of which year, which in some ways adds some more complexity to how this would operate.
Thank you.
Questions on dates?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm in complete disagreement with Ms. Toswell, so she's not surprised at all here. And second, we're in court on this particular issue right now, too, in 1528. So we're going to find out from a judge whether it's right or wrong in Oregon tax court. But I will bring to the next session, and I quote from the voter's pamphlet that counsel pointed out right here a few minutes ago, just so we're in clarity. And this is in the voter explanation. If no action is taken, change in the federal taxable income are automatically adopted. The legislature retains its power to set income tax rates and credits. So in a nutshell, well, the plain text of the language sort of is iffy because none of us were here in 1969, and counsel is correct on that. The ballot title itself, the ballot explanation put before the voters, and both explanations in a favor and in opposition of it, very clearly anticipate, as was correctly pointed earlier, that it would automatically connect to the federal tax code, and we might come back in session a year later and have the option to go back and review it and do that. That is in the ballot title. I think if you look under both Priest-Pierce doctrine, the court is going to look at this and say, what is the historical context? And once again, in 1528, this is in it. So we're about to find out very shortly if they care to rule on that particular count. But the law that was passed by the voters, I'm not disagreeing and don't disagree with you that we have some problems with the present connection. I'm just pointing out that the constitutional issue before us and that was placed before the voters after the 1969 reforms and put on the ballot in the general election in 1970 and passed and put into the Constitution is based on what the ballot, what the voters perceived at that time. And all voters' explanation and all the arguments in favor and opposed all clearly say we automatically connect, period, and then we go back and fix it later. Now, I do realize that they didn't write it very well. And Ms. Toswell is correct that it sort of looks like it's permissive, but that's not what they told the voters. So we're going to find out what transpired. And I'm sure you've looked at all of what I'm talking to you or mentioning right now. I just happened to call it up because I have a lawsuit sitting in front of me. So,
yeah. Rebuttal. Did you want to comment on that?
Okay. Chair Haas, I think the text of the provision speaks for itself. I too have read the voters' pamphlet, and it suggests that there will be connection, and then obviously the legislature can come back in and undo or review those any changes. Which I think, one way or the other, it gets you to the same place. But it may be a question of semantics, or it may be that that's not what people thought they were voting on. That's pretty much what we have to rely on. And again, there's nowhere that it refers to either adjusted gross income or taxable income. So I believe that the principle that the 1969 legislature can't bind a future legislature probably prevails over all of this.
I'm not sure. I mean, if the court ruled on a constitutional portion, the constitutional portion would prevail. Doesn't matter from there. So, I mean, and we're about to find out here shortly. Hopefully before the legislature is out, because if not, we could be doing an awful lot of work, hopefully. So.
All right. Back to bind the deductions back in, were we to go this route, would those be included in Senate Bill 214, for example?
Chair Haas, they could be. I mean, it would need an amendment.
Well, of course, 214 would be pretty different from what I can tell. It would have to be pretty different. But would that be the appropriate place to do that? Or would it be separate?
I think it would probably be the place to do it, just to deal with everything at one time. So the language would be very different. The connection would move to AGI. And then you can address all of the policies that are basically Schedule A deductions, itemized deductions.
Yeah.
Whether the time period we're talking about pre-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act or post-Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, all of that could enter that discussion there. And then, yeah.
Okay. Senator Benz, are you okay?
I just I had a question about AGI. Did you say most states do use AGI?
41.
And I'm not sure I asked why we didn't. Did you guys look historically? Did you already tell me that? Didn't hear it, or what?
Chair House Senator Benz, the one thing I can say is I've looked at the statutory language from the Personal Income Tax Act of 1953, the 1967 version of that. It looks very different from what has existed essentially since 1969, and it does have substantive definitions of gross income, net income, various other provisions, and it doesn't rely on the Internal Revenue Code. There are a few places that there are exclusions or deductions that are not allowed that are allowed under the code, but it's a different framework, and it has defined terms in a way that we don't rely on anymore. And I don't know if other states have continued to do that, have used an approach such as that, where there's actually a substantive definition as opposed to a definition that points to the Internal Revenue Code.
Follow up. So historically, I'm just trying to figure out why we're currently using taxable income and not AGI. Was that just a matter of... that's how it's been for so long when nobody's checked? Or I'm just trying to figure out why that's the way it is.
Chair House Senator Benz, as far as I can tell from looking at the voter's pamphlet and looking at the legislation from 1969, the idea was that this would provide simplicity, that tying to the federal code as much as possible would make it simpler for taxpayers and tax preparers.
So I understand.
And it's a similar, I believe, with the corporate structure. I mean, a lot of the same principles apply, but I've been really focusing on the Chapter 316, personal income tax.
And a follow-up. The concept was simplicity tied to the federal code. They had taxable income, therefore we had taxable income, and it stayed that way ever since. And this is the first attempt to change it.
Chair House, Senator Benz, as far as I'm aware, in the time that I've been here, I don't know that there's been an effort where a bill has moved that would make this change. But certainly, if you look at Chapter 316 today, it looks very similar to the 1969 edition of the ORS.
Thank you.
I think it might be in part of what you mean by changed. I mean, this concept has been discussed, and even under current law, we have various additions and subtractions. So we have a starting point of federal taxable income, and then we have additions and subtractions so that Oregon taxable income is different from federal taxable income. So I think you were talking about a wholesale change as opposed to separate connections. Okay.
Thank you.
50 years ago, a lot of change since 1969, the summer of love.
At the two ends of the bench, the hair color is mostly not changed.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll keep slogging away at this. We'll look at some amendments. And thank you, Kay, for coming over. And Marcia Kelly had been signed up to testify. I don't know. Do you still want to testify and get into this? I mean, it's pretty straightforward and simple.
Chair Hass and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. I'm only interested in Section 1 of 213 and making sure that the legislative intent is that 529 plans, which we heard about yesterday in this committee, stay as 529 plans for higher education, and that because the federal definition of higher education has changed to include private schools, elementary and secondary. However, there was a bill, thanks, Kyle, there was a bill in 2018 House Bill 4080, which did specify that there is, you have to add back to your income if you received a tax credit for making a contribution to a 529 plan and then use that 529 plan for elementary and high school private, public, or religious education. And so I just wanted to make sure that that legislative intent was clarified and it stays there, because the whole idea of the 529 plan is higher education.
Great. Thanks for making sure we catch that. Questions? Thank you.
Okay. Good discussion. Thank you, everyone. We have nothing else on the agenda, so that means it is time to adjourn. We will adjourn.